A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jules Gill, why do I sound like a dying man? Why do I sound like the Callisto Protocol's gummers?
Oh, well, the thing is, mate, thank you, by the way, for dropping a video game reference to a game I've not played and half of the other people in this world haven't played as well at the point of recording. I mean, you are so in there already that you're getting the references down early.
I'm sitting waiting for the postman. I can't wait for him to arrive.
You are basically the same paradox as the new Marvel game Midnight Suns, because you are both a hot piece of stuff, but also you have a cold. So there we go.
Very good. I think Midnight Suns, Need for Speed Unbound, and Callisto Protocol all just randomly out on the same day. They couldn't have staggered them a little bit or something.
I mean, it's almost like Christmas is around the corner and they want to get some money.
I suppose, but it's like a week after Black Friday. I would have just spaced these out or have one last month or something. But yeah,
they know what they've done. It's payday yesterday and now it's just go, spend all that money now, get them now. You said before we began this podcast, oh, which one of the three do I buy? And then I believe the words were, F it, I've just got paid all of them.
I know, because I was looking at the prices last night as it broke at midnight, because I've ordered Callisto Protocol physically. That's why I'm waiting for the little postman to arrive. And then I was like,
The little postman? Wow, how belittling to their job. No, I'm just joking.
I think making anything little makes it more adorable. So if the little postman comes with my little game, then it'll be great.
Is it like Tiny Peter Austin? Is he going to come and deliver a game for you?
He's holding it with both hands. Put it in the letterbox. I should say that I'm very ill right now, which is why we're always recording remote.
They can tell, dude.
But I've got some more energy today. I just still sound like I'm underwater, so I sound like I've got a chorus effect on me.
Do you know what it is? I think it's the plague of Sonic Frontiers has finally caught up with you. You tried to deny it for so long, and when you finally accepted that it was absolute dreck, you ate down
I got the platinum. Don't you worry about it.
That's the sickness. There it is.
On Tuesday, one of my first days off, I've been off for the last 3 days. And on Tuesday, I was like, I'm just going to sit and do, because there's a bunch of trophies in that game that are just grinding stuff out.
Yeah.
And there's one animation, because they didn't program the ability for you to cash in all of these tokens all at once. So you have to interact with this and do three lines of text to get one upgrade. You have to do that less than 140 times. Or I had to anyway, because I had to do it 100 for one star. And then another 40-odd for the other one. So I just sat there, half ill, just pushing X over and
I'm
over
just,
again.
I'm not going to lie, mate. I'm taking that exact experience and I'm going to write that into a list next week. the exact moments that video games wasted your time, because that is on there. That is number one. And I'll get you in. I'll will you in just so you can tell this story. Because you'll have gotten worse by then, surely.
I'll be like that guy at the end of House of the Dragon, where I'm just barely alive, my face is falling off.
By the way, Scott, it is a classic near 2.5 minute intro, and we haven't even explained what the podcast is.
No, I should say this is the entitled part of podcast, the UBP. And I did want to do a massive thank you and a shout out to everybody who tagged us in their Spotify Wrapped stuff this year.
Most
listened to podcast, which is incredible. Like some people's number one in a lot of people's top fives. That was genuinely so lush, and just such a massive thank you to everybody. So obviously the entire feed is in there, so that's the main podcast, this and the wind up.
I will say that we probably need to give a lot of thanks to you, Scott, because of all three of the things you've just listed, you are the host. You have taken the podcast of the What Culture Gaming channel and you have made it successful, which is really, really good. Thank you for including me with this. All the boys as well wish you the best with this and a speedy recovery.
Yes.
And that's the end of the podcast. Scott's about to die now, so see you later. To be fair, though, this podcast right here, the beginning of the new age now that we've got the 2022 Wrapped stuff done, is slightly different, because not only do you have questions that the audience has submitted, but I have questions too, because I put out a very silly video on my Instagram feed and was asking people to send in their questions. So I will be asking Scott questions as well. Yes. That he does not know. This is crazy.
No, you don't know which ones I've got. We thought we'd experimenting with some stuff because old Elon continues to tank Twitter. So we thought we'd see what was going on. I mean, I think most people are staying on Twitter. I think that'll be the... We'll see. But right now, people seem to be staying on Twitter. But we thought, why not experiment with something else? So I've rounded up all the stuff on Twitter. You rounded up all the stuff on Instagram. And we'll just trade them back and forward for a bit.
Yep. The thing is, I'm staying on Twitter, but only because I want to become the physical manifestation of the... You know the guy who you always meet in Dark Souls who just laughs at being defeated all the time? The hapless guy that you meet in every bonfire, the first one? That's going to be me. That's the position I'm taking in... my Twitter war, as it were.
Yeah, just having a random sentence and then laughing off into the distance. As everyone else brings.
Life is bleak.
Thought you had opinions, did you? But you also asked people what their first gaming device was, which I wanted to twin. I wanted to combine that with everyone saying that we were their most listened to podcast, because I love that our audience lines up with us. Like, it's a lot of people saying their first gaming device was a PlayStation 1, a Commodore, a Spectrum, an NES, a Game Boy, and some Mega Drives in there as well.
Amazing.
What were yours? My very first one was a Master System way back
when. Well, so if we go for a very first video game device, it would probably be one of those Tiger handheld gaming consoles that weren't real sort of thing. But I think
it's like one of those weird LED things where it's like one button and then you move a little dune around. Yeah,
I think that my first thing that I ever had was probably a Game Boy. I think that was because my dad had that and it was crazy. I remember seeing him play Tetris and was just absolutely blown away with it. But I think the first gaming console that we had in the house would have been a SNES. I missed out on the NES generation, so we got the SNES, because I think I've just got like really powerful memories of Super Ghouls and Ghosts as being one of my favourite things I played. I sucked at that game. Absolutely sucked at it.
I think I had that on... Was there a version of that on Mega Drive? Because I think there was.
But it was called like Ghosts and Goblins or something. Like that. They had like weird things, didn't they? Like they just changed the name slightly.
Yeah, that was stupidly hard. Like, I remember like my friend had that. I had a Mega Drive and was playing Sonic and I was blown away by Sonic, and then I went to buy a Mega Drive and all they had was a Master System, and young me didn't know the difference, so I came home with a Master System. So it's kind of Mega Drive, but the one that I owned was a Master System.
Yep, got you.
But still... I'd love people to get in touch if their first device was something newer than that. Like if their first device was like a PS3 or something. That would be kind of crazy.
The mad thing is that there's going to be kids out there now whose first gaming experience is either going to be a super high-end PC or it's going to be like a PlayStation 5 or whatever. And they're going to be going like, what is the trash that the people above me used to play?
Like, imagine getting your first console as a PS5. Like your first game is like Astro Boy or something.
But what is really, really dangerous though is that they will come in with the normalization of all of the bad practices of the industry. So it's like microtransactions, season passes, battle passes, all of the stuff that we say are negative. We are becoming the sort of old man yelling at the cloud thing, because it's not changing and it's become so embedded in what gaming is. The kids will just be like, no, this is normal. It's not normal to unlock stuff. It's not normal to have these extra features that I don't pay for.
No, we should absolutely do an anti-tech podcast called Old Man Yells at Cloud, where you just get sick of cloud servers.
I like that. I really like that.
I know, that would totally work. We'll get through as many questions as we can. First one from Jack Jingle, who says, what game of all time have you yet to play or came too late? I'm just getting to Okami on the Switch with Super Metroid and any other Zelda other than Link to the Past being notable omissions, as the SNES was my first console. What stands out for you? What's your most obvious thing you've not played?
Dude, I'm going to cop out on this one here and just say all of them. Single one. Like, I miss every single giant like gaming milestone, apart from maybe like Halo Infinite coming back around, or like I was there for Gears of War and stuff like that, and maybe
you played like all the old things, like Ocarina of Time and everything.
I didn't play Ocarina of Time when it came out. Waited ages and I played it on the Nintendo 3DS. That was my first experience with it. And the thing is, it's what started this whole trend of me going, I'm not going to get the game when it comes out. I'm going to wait for the inevitable Game of the Year edition super deluxe package that has all of the DLC at half the price. I remember when I picked up Red Dead Redemption and it had the Undead Nightmare pack included in it as well. That was like one of the smartest decisions I ever made in my life. That was £15 at CEX and I had a whale of a time. My enjoyment level to pounds spent was so sky high. And the best part is, Scott, I've seen people on Twitter saying that they're adopting my philosophy now. I've seen them that they're only downloading like 5 games on their library to be able to access them at a time. I've seen them wait for the Game of the Year. Yes, the penny pinchers are coming back.
Whereas there's me going like, I could buy Need for Speed and Callisto Protocol and Midnight Suns and just look at all three of them.
But the thing is, you you allow me, you fund our lackadaisical nature, because what happens is you're the first party on the ground floor who comes in, you get all the bugs out of the way for us, and we basically then stroll in pretending like we own the place after.
Oh my god, right, speaking of bugs, it was like, I saw yesterday that Pokemon Scarlet and Violet's getting patched.
Oh, what a trash fire. What a,
I don't know, well, that game, I mean, I have many things to say about that game. I think it's a great game, there's things on paper, the ideas are great, it's just performance is absolutely unacceptable, but I saw that they were doing a patch for it, and I got legitimately excited for a patch, and then I took a minute and I was like, what absolute state of gaming is it where I'm excited for a frame rate patch? But I'm just excited for them to deliver the thing that I thought they delivered the week before. But yeah, it's just the state of it where you just have to wait. I hope they fix it, guys. I hope they make it worth the money I've already paid.
It's like, a shame, isn't it? It's a real shame. Dumb. And then you've got people like on the other side, like Darktide had one of the most successful beta launches ever. Mm. It did have some teething problems when it released its first beta like a month ago, had an elongated beta. They put out a day one patch yesterday and it's running so much better as a result. Good. But they allow people to just go, yeah, we're fixing it right now. We're not, and we're a small studio. We have to turn this around because otherwise it's the reputation of our entire studio that could collapse.
Well, it's like you always see like fan mods change stuff straight away as well. Like even Sonic, like obviously that game has terrible pop-in. It was fixed. Yeah. Immediately on Twitter.
Like the do you remember Dark Souls when that came out and somebody came up with a Blighttown fix or some sort of like frame rate fix within 3 hours of the game launching on PC? Like, that's crazy that they can just do that.
But it's just one of those things. I mean, I think it's just because of the sheer reality of like the devs just didn't have enough time to polish it. They obviously that's always the thing. Whenever I've watched interviews with developers, they're always fully aware of the issues because they're the ones screaming at the management before it goes live. Just give us an extra few weeks or something.
When you spoke to Tommy Miller, who's an ex-Ubisoft developer, he was saying like, of course we want the game, of course we want the game to be good. Yeah. Why would we want to release a bad game? Yeah. There's extenuating circumstances that we, the consumer, are not aware of that means that the game's release in this finished state. There is no such thing as a lazy game developer, I would argue.
No, not at all. And I think that's always the thing that I get is so annoying from the inside, is that if you can notice a bug, they noticed it months beforehand and they've been wanting to fix it for so long, but they have like dates to hit and whatever else. But yeah, in terms of like best games or like, you know, biggest games of all time that I haven't got to, mine's definitely Half-Life 2. Because
have you never played it?
I have, and I just never finished it. I've started it over and over and over again. I think it was such a good point in time, and I love the physics in it. And I always like play a good few hours of it, and I get through all the sewer levels and all that kind of stuff. I drive the buggy and everything, but I never finish it. It just doesn't keep me. And for me, it's like the level design is so kind of like tech demo-y, like in terms of just showing off the physics, which is great at the time, 2004 or whatever it was. It was revolutionary, and I remember how much of a big deal it was. But that and Crysis were both like games that were just like, look at these physics, and I was like, this is incredible. But the actual layout of the levels, the actual thing I'm doing, isn't really that fun.
It's and still stuck in that time period, isn't it?
Yeah, and like for me with Half-Life, I was coming onto it after Halo. So it was just like, I'd played the Halo campaign, and everyone was freaking out about Half-Life. And for me, back then, it didn't even compare. And I've gone back to Half-Life over the years, but it just never keeps me. I always think the physics are cool, and I do love Havoc physics, but like, yeah, I've never actually finished Half-Life 2. So that's always my one.
Fair enough, man. It's fair enough. I mean, there's like a fair few other classic games that I've never gotten around to or I spent ages. I mean, God of War was the most recent one, because I remember all of you guys telling me about how phenomenal it was. And I just sat there just going like, I will wait. I will bide my time. And then as soon as it came out, it was like half price in a sale or something like that. And again, might have been at CEX that I picked it up, and boom, had the best time of my life with it. And I'm so glad that I waited, because sometimes I find that you can end up in this like a conversation maelstrom where everyone's talking, they've got their opinions on what the endings or the themes of this game are, and you sit there in the middle and you're just like, I feel like I'm lost in the greater conversation. And sometimes it's nicer to just step back and just experience it yourself first rather than just get whipped into a frenzy.
I mean, that's the thing, like, because I've been off the last few days, I've been playing Inscription, and I remember that
I've just finished it.
Right, okay, sweet. Yeah. So like that game, I remember that dropped like earlier this year on consoles. It's been out since last year on PC, but I finally got around to that on Wednesday morning. I played about 15 hours in like 2 days.
How good is that game?
Oh, dude, like that thing is insane. I remember thinking like, because there's a whole like distinction for roguelikes where it's like roguelikes that make you fight the bosses over and over again, and roguelikes that bank the bosses. And Inscription is one where you are fighting the bosses over and over again, which got annoying for me in the first act. But once you break through that act and it like plays its hand and you realize what's really going on and everything else, That game is unbelievable. Like, I love games that have mystery to them. And I think that it's so hard to get actual genuine mystery in a game, like today in 2022, because people can just Google stuff or, you know, they hear about it ahead of time. But that game, like, if you don't know anything about it, it's like it's a card battler puzzle game with a little bit of deck building, set around a roguelike, but it's basically like you're in a cabin with a mysterious figure and you are just trying to beat him. And you know, like, that's pretty much all you should know.
But it evolves, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's way more going on. To
borrow your own terminology, it goes places, which is interesting as well, because I got a question on Instagram from Suggy Roo, who said, I know you guys like Magic the Gathering. Have you played any digital card games, which is obviously what we're talking about now with Inscription, currently in love with Marvel Snap? And I haven't played Marvel Snap, but in terms of like other card based games, because Inscription has got to be up there in terms of one of my favorite ones. However, Marvel's Midnight Suns card based game, it is absolutely brilliant. I'm going to do a mini review for you here, Scott.
Okay.
I fully recommend this game. Good. I fully recommend it. It is, it's not XCOM, and I think that people need to get that out of their craw. It is challenging and tactical like XCOM. The deck building mechanic is phenomenally deep, and the ability to create your own cards, imbue them with special powers, make sure that you stack the deck in your favor. The fact that injuries to your characters means that you'll draw dead cards, as in like, you are injured and you can't use this card. You have to redraw it and waste a turn, effectively. It's phenomenally deep. I love this game. The worst aspect of the game is the fact that it's been James Gunned to death, in the sense that everyone's quip happy, everyone's the funny one, everyone's got to have these sort of like gimmicky, pseudo cringeworthy talking bracelet style forespoken dialogue. But it's not bad enough to detract from the entirety of the game's plot. I really enjoy it. Gameplay's stupendously good. I just kind of wish that the relationship mechanics and all of the exploration stuff was maybe boiled down. I would have actually preferred it to be menu-based in some areas, with you just expanding the base like you do in XCOM. I didn't need freedom and running around grounds, just basically going from checkpoint to checkpoint with nothing in between.
That's like fast becoming the biggest negative about it.
Yeah, it just is like, what's the point of having an open world space if there is...
if it's just
All you're doing is going from point A to point B with nothing in between those things. It's like, cool, yeah, you've just got a nice background.
Yeah, I saw a thing where it was like, you can go fishing with like Wolverine or something, or you can go fishing with someone.
It's
like,
yeah, it
weird
creates
friendship minigames.
So the friendship minigames, I see a lot of hate for them, but you have to understand, you're playing as a character who's been awoken. This is in the opening 10 seconds, so you're not spoiling anything here. You awake as a character who has been resurrected, called the Hunter, and you have been asleep for like thousands of years. So when you come back in, you don't know the Avengers. You don't know all of these superheroes. You are actually getting to know them, and you're stuck in this place with them. You kind of have to get along, because if you're not, you're going to kill them, or they're going to kill you or betray you. So it does make sense from a perspective of...
that's kind of cool.
Like, thematics, it makes sense. Like, if you and I were trapped in a spooky, ethereal mansion, we'd make the best of it. We wouldn't just stand, you go onto the library in the west wing and I'll stay here. You would actually try to make the best of it. And your choices of those activities, they can result in some very, very silly and funny stuff. Like taking Wolverine fishing, for example, it's not in character, but who's to say that Wolverine likes that activity? Because half the time, if you take them on activities like that and they don't agree with it, they go, yeah, that was rubbish. Why did we do that?
Really?
That was a waste of my time.
Because I like the idea of almost like persona in like the Marvel
cast. It
kind
of does have that.
Like,
it does have that.
You've got like an academy, you're all hanging out. And I like the idea of that. And Pokemon kind of has that too, where you're in an academy, you're doing different lessons. A bit like Bully, you're sort of choosing to take lessons and learn stuff that way. But Marvel Snap I downloaded because everyone was talking about it, and it's very Hearthstone, which is cool. But it was just
Wasn't it made by the Hearthstone team?
God, maybe, I'm not sure. I just grabbed it. It was like a freebie on Android, so I just got it. I played like a few rounds of it. I'm kind of too checked out of Marvel stuff to sort of overlook how much I'm just burnt out on superheroes. But with Midnight Suns, I like the look of the combat, where it's like you can sort of chain stuff together, and it's like use parts of the environment and stuff. Like that's getting me, wants me to, that makes me want to play it.
Again, I won't say who it is, because it will potentially be spoilers for character cast members there, but I had one moment where there was an explosion that was going to go off at the end of my turn, and all of my heroes were in the center, and I had no way of getting them out of that center all in one piece. So I had to become really creative and use the environment to position them around. So, for example, there's like a box in front of one of them. So I told them to run and jump off the box so it moved them out of the area. Then right. I pushed another person, forcefully knocked back my bloke out of the circle, but put them into the danger zone. And it was basically just like maneuvering around it at the end when the explosion went off. My three heroes had been replaced with four enemies. And I was they all died. And I was like, that felt so satisfying to pull off.
Because I like the idea of like, they've got rid of like, obviously there's no cover, there's no percentage chance to hit. Like superheroes always hit.
Yeah.
And there's no cover anymore, which is really cool on Fire Axis's part, because you've had so many XCOM games for so long, and I like the idea of them just uprooting it and designing a whole new attempt at turn-based combat. In terms of other card stuff, I would flag, it's called King of Cards. It's one of the Shovel Knight expansions.
Phenomenally
well done. Like, you play as King Knight for that whole game's campaign, but you can talk to characters and challenge them to card games. Kind of like Final Fantasy VIII's Triple Triad, which is another one. Yeah, I always think of the King of Cards separate thing, because they really fleshed that out. Like, it was a whole like Kickstarter goal or Patreon goal or whatever, and they really fleshed that out as like its own mode. It's really, really cool.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You know which card game needs to be banned, though? Bloody Caravan from Fallout New Vegas. Like, I've met a few people that just go, oh, I totally understand the rules to Caravan. I'm like, do you really, though? Because much like the... there's a good joke coming up here. Much like the jazz song Caravan that is featured in the film Whiplash, it's not quite my tempo.
Very good. Very well done. I thought you were going to make some sort of Pantera reference, because I believe that they... Do they have a song? I don't know, actually.
They might have done that. Probably would have been an easier joke.
I just thought they're touring with Metallica next year, so Pantera is on the brain. But
back to you for questions, mate. Where are we going?
Yes, next question from Anthony, who says, do we like anime? If so, what is our top five? If not, why not? Their favourites are Dragon Ball Z, GT and Super, Naruto, Death Note, My Hero Academia, and Demon Slayer. Keep up the good work. We are brilliant. Thank you very much. You are all brilliant, too. Top five, I don't know if I've got five anime. I do love anime, but I'm very specific.
You're a big fan of Dragon Ball, aren't you?
Dude, Dragon Ball, watched most of Super this year. I mean, I watched most of Dragon Ball Z across this year, just across the summer, and then bought the Super box set, so I'm working my way through
that.
Played way more of FighterZ, downloadable characters for it. Demon Slayer is unbelievably good. That thing got me in massively. I absolutely love it. Just finished season two this year, and I would shout out One Punch Man.
One Punch Man's great.
But I love season one of One Punch. I can't think of any other. I mean, Castlevania count? I guess it does.
Yeah, I mean, it is an animation. Yeah.
It's in that style. I would say Castlevania. Netflix is Castlevania. And I will think of a fifth.
What about the Cyberpunk one that just got
Edgerunners? Oh my god, Edgerunners. Yeah. Cyberpunk's a great shout. My adult mind couldn't think of that in this state.
That's okay, mate.
But yeah, those would be my top five. Maybe in that order. I do think Demon Slayer is maybe my favourite, though. I really want to dress as Tanjiro for Halloween. I want to get a full costume with big spiky hair and everything. It's really cool.
See, I too could dress as One Punch Man. I wouldn't have to do much apart from just shave my beard and get ripped, potentially could happen. One Punch Man is hilarious fun. However, I've actually found the artists, the manga artist, did another series called Mob Psycho 100, and that is hilarious. It is so good. The whole concept is that there's this child called Mob who's got this incredible psychic powers, but he's sworn never to use them against humans, and he's completely emotionless as a result because he's locked everything down. So he's kind of got that One Punch Man Saitama sort of like, I'm super powerful, but nothing can actually faze me.
Right.
And basically, the entire show is people messing with him to try and get him to use the powers. And when they do, they're like, I wish I'd never done this.
I like that he writes sort of inverted characters. Like, they could just level the world, but they did. And then like Orange Cassidy at AEW style, it's just sort of like, oh, I could do this, but I'm not too bad. Because have you seen Chainsaw Man yet?
I was just about to say that has instantly become one of my favorite animes ever. Ooh. Because I'm up to date, and we have just had an episode that, well, I cannot spoil it in the slightest, but there are your central cast is just completely like not your central cast anymore, and it's like okay, I'm being left on a cliffhanger, and I haven't watched the episode that went up last night, and I am itching to watch it, man.
Really, I need to get caught up because I keep seeing posters for it, and I just love the art style for it. It looks really cool. But I was going to say, like, with One Punch Man, that's the only anime that I watch dubbed because I actually really like the Western cast.
Yeah.
Whereas everything else, I'll stick Japanese. I guess actually Dragon Ball, that will be English cast as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, Chainsaw Man seems really, really cool.
If you have any... very... One Piece I really like as well. I'm episode 103 now, and it's like 1,000 episodes long, so it's a long haul, but I'm trying my best to get there. My Hero Academia as well, just caught up in the new season, absolutely in love with it.
I still need to watch that.
It's just one of those beautiful animes where you just go, cool, these are the expected tropes. Let's invert some of them, all of them. And you have characters that come in and you think that they're going to be a big deal, and then they're killed. Or you have people that you don't think are going to be a big deal, and they turn out to be amazing, revolutionary to the plot. It's just, there's some fight scenes in the newest season as well, because it is a really action-heavy one.
Mm.
Some of the best animated fight scenes I've seen in a long time. Right. So big credit to the studio for doing that.
That's cool. I saw a live action version. Guy De Silva did it. He's like a dude that worked on Black Panther, and he's like a stuntman. He was on Corridor Crew, and then they showed like his live action version of a My Hero Academia fight, and I was like, okay, if this is the power set, then I need to watch the full show.
Yeah.
But I haven't got there yet.
My final one, I guess, would probably be Afro Samurai. As a series, I can't think of anything more entertaining. Mm. It's just action, 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 crazy good visuals. Samuel L. Jackson's in there as well. And a really interesting and simplistic storyline. I've got the number one headband. I am the best warrior in the world. You can only kill me if you have the number two headband. Everyone fights for the number two headband. That's it. That's the simple story. And I love it. It's just so good.
That's cool. I remember I was doing a shout out as well because you mentioned samurai made me think of anime samurais.
Yeah.
I thought of the Star Wars Vision stuff is actually quite good.
Oh, yeah, man.
It's like a little spin-off, like sort of vignette story stuff. I think it's the first episode of that. It's like a black and white samurai story. Like, that's really well done, like through the lens of Star Wars. What was your next question, sir?
Oh, sorry, the next question. I just got started thinking of other animes that I really liked, and I was thinking of Samurai Champloo. I was thinking of Cowboy Bebop.
Bebop's a show as well. I should have mentioned that.
There was one other one. Oh, yeah, a Space Dandy. Absolutely hilarious. So I had my next question, though, is from Big Dogs Loan, or Big Dog Sloan, saying, what is a childhood game you loved that you've replayed and realized that it was absolutely terrible?
Oh, God. I feel like I had that with something on PS1.
It's got to be PS1, hasn't it? Because it's when you go back to the graphics and you're like, okay.
I know. I think it's nearly always something where you go back to something that was like fun and carefree and action-y at the time. And then you go back to it now and it's like, oh my God, this script has aged quite a lot. I just kind of had it a little bit with Gears of War. I know it's not PS1.
Oh, really?
But I went back to Gears. And it's not that I don't love Gears, but I definitely loved it more in 2006. I felt like it was more of a breakthrough thing back then, and a lot of the dialogue and how sort of like gruff everything was.
It's a bit
like,
cringy, isn't it?
I thought it was more mature than it was. Not that there's not mature themes in there, but I had a similar thing because I was listening to the Callisto Protocol podcast. There's like a prequel podcast.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
the
cool.
Game, because I was like, I'm all in on Callisto, so I was like, I want to listen to the podcast. I want to get ready for it and everything. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the dialogue in that podcast, the prequel, was just so heavy-handed. It was just so like, we need to kill all this stuff and all my haul ass, we need to do this.
Oh,
and I was like,
no.
Okay. And I was like, yep, this is so 2000s, and I get what you're going for. It's like a whole style. But at the same time, there's something about when you replay like those games from the 2000s where you sort of notice like, oh my god, this really was of a time. Not necessarily in a negative way. But it's like, yeah, something like Gears. I'm trying to think of stuff from like PS2 or PS1 era, but I definitely notice all that stuff.
Thing is that like when I go back to games like Jack 2, I think that it's like much better than it was, but I've been spoiled by open world sandbox titles and dystopian futures from recent games that I go back to it and I'm like, yeah, this is kind of tame. It's really tame. But at the time, that's amazing, but you can't appreciate it in the same lens now, really.
That thing, though, that whole sort of rush that there was after, like, GTA 3 to sort of make everyone more, like, gruff and like, you know, against the grain and whatever. And even Jack, like, became, like, a voice protagonist in Jack 2. But he has a little goatee.
I'm going to kill him. That was, like, his first
kill
line.
In Praxis. And it's like, yeah, that stuff. Which, you know, when you're, like, a teenager, it's incredible because you're like, oh, my God, it's, like, so... And it was of the zeitgeist at the time. It was, like, everyone's sequel character was doing that. Prince of Persia, Warrior Within is a massive one. In fact, I think that's what I'm thinking of because I bought Warrior
when he
Within.
when he gets all like angsty in the sequel.
Yeah, and Godsmack was on the soundtrack, man. Which like, you know, 14-year-old me was absolutely loving that. But when you go back to Warrior Within now, it's so cringy. It's so just, I'm going to kill everyone. I'm just like, oh yeah, sure, just angst the game. And I love that stuff. Like, I'm a big metalhead. Obviously, we both are. There's totally a side of like metal that is just big and dumb and fun, and that's great. But it was very self-serious back in the early 2000s or the mid-2000s in a way that's just funny now.
Do you know what was quite funny is that because of a recent video, I had to go back and check some footage for Siphon Filter. Because there was like a rumor that was going around that if you keep the taser going on somebody, not only do they set on fire, but they never stop screaming, which is a really harrowing moment for a man who's supposed to be fighting for justice.
Yeah,
So I went back and watched that. And when I was going back through the gameplay of it, I was like, oh, this is... okay, I remember this game being a lot different. I remember it being like, I picked up a copy of like the official PlayStation magazine and it had like 9 out of 10, Gabe on the front. I was like, this game is the best. I love this game. Played the demo religiously, got it when it came out, completed it multiple times over. But then when I was just going back to it, I was just like, wow, this... had
it's the movement,
nothing. The taser was pretty much the only unique thing that game did. I was like, what? Okay.
Because though, like, there was that, like, because it's like the Die Hard trilogy game, like anything where the camera was over shoulder before Gears of War nailed the cover system, like the idea of a third person shooter just didn't really exist. Like Resident Evil 4 was a whole massive step, so was Gears, but anything before then was like just revolutionary because it existed. Like Operation Winback is like that, I mean, that's still kind of fun now, but it's very like it's very robotic in terms of like, take cover here, shoot this way, but stuff like that, like, it was like a huge deal at the time. Did you, how little was going on?
Did you ever play Hogs of War, mate?
Oh, dude, I love Hogs. Well, I used to love Hogs of War.
Right.
I imagine it's aged horribly.
Yeah, it's so bad because the fact that I still think that the gameplay holds up today. Right. I think that it's absolutely hilarious.
What's the turn-based Worms 3D thing?
What I find less hilarious is the Rick Mail impressions of other nations. Yes. That is so dicey that you can't even... like, it's bad. I think it's real bad.
When you go back to something like that and you realize... Because there's loads of conversations that happen all the time of like, oh, have we gotten softer as a people? Have we changed as a people? Can we handle all sorts of different topics that we could handle before? And then you go back to something like that and it's like, oh my god, no. Like, this was never something that we should have been okay with.
It's very much a thing of like, even if people are going, oh, we've gotten air quotes softer, you'd be like, no, that's okay to be soft about because you are literally pointing and laughing at another nationality. That's not okay.
Or doing your best sort of like overly caricaturish version of that accent rather than getting someone in to do it or whatever.
Could you imagine him just doing the takes and he's like, you know what, I reckon I can do another take, let's dial it up even more, and they're just like shaking their heads like, no, we've got it, we've got it.
That's a game that's really, it's a really, if you want to just know how far we've come, go
that's
check
the
out
the milestone. There it is.
that's a good point in human history. My next question down is from Jared Lieberman, Liebergen, who says, with the Game Awards coming up, is there any award in past years that was given to one game that you think should have been given to something else? E.g., my controversial pick is the Bloodborne should have been Game of the Year for 2015.
This entire period that we've just had now, Stray won that, and like,
yes.
Thing is, it's like, should Stray have won that award? It's a game that has a cat, and it tells an emotional story of a cat. You're appealing to the internet rather than a sensibility. And it if you love that game, absolutely fine. Mm. But objectively, look at that game. Look at the animations. Look at the way it plays. Look at the puzzles and ask yourself, is this really pushing the boundaries of anything other than just you are cat, lol?
The thing is, like, we're still waiting on the game. Like, the Game Awards will be next week, I think, whatever the 8th is. So we'll see.
But still.
That'd be hilarious if that actually wins and beats, like, Horizon and God of War and stuff.
Yeah.
I imagine it won't. It did win the Golden Joysticks one, but that's crowd voted, so you've only got yourselves to blame in that regard.
But yeah, still. But this is what I'm thinking. It just in terms of award shows, that's the one that sticks in my mind most
recently. That as well.
In terms of like actual game, the Game Awards stuff, though, I can't remember what's won and that I got annoyed about. Mm. But I'm sure that there has been.
For me, it's like it's always things like Titanfall 2. Like I feel like that should have been held up a hell of a lot more than you know, the Call of Duties, the Battlefields, or whatever. And it's not like Titanfall didn't get its due, but that, that easily could have been Game of the Year 2016. I would take that over and Overwatch. I forget what the Game Awards gave Game of the Year to in 2016, but it wouldn't have been Titanfall. And it's things like that. I think there's like there's, you know, games that just go on to become cult classics or just are clearly better than whatever, you know, succeeded in the year. Although I do think the Game Awards for the most part get it right. I was glad they gave it to The Witcher in 2015.
It's interesting as well when you look at the sort of games that have been released recently and how few of them probably won't get their day in the sun at events like the Game Awards.
Well, Inscription, I mean, that's not getting nominated for anything.
No, and you've got like Neon White, you've got Signalis as well, like lots of games that have reviewed incredibly well, but probably because they don't hit that sort of, let's just call it what it is, Oscar-esque.
It's that general association that a game has to look beautiful for it to be recommended for a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Look beautiful and have a very deep and engaging storyline.
Yes.
There's very few that don't have those two overlapping at some point, which is a real shame because, I mean, do you think that Sifu's going to get a nod?
Sifu was up for best action game, I think. And
okay.
Best something,
but do you think
else?
It'll win? Because I actually genuinely think that if you look at the action games that have come out this year, that is the best action game.
I would
surely
say so. Like
surely.
The most pure. I guess it's like, I've not played Callisto yet. Apparently that game has like some insane combat model to it. But still, yeah, Sifu I absolutely adore. Like, I mean, I think that that's just so tight. It's so like mechanically rewarding. Yeah, I would love Sifu to get something. I just don't know what category you put it in where it's like the front runner. Because for the Game Awards, it's in the best fighting game category, which it's not a fighting game.
No, that's like, that's almost skewed it against it, hasn't it?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You're going to have people that are just going, no, it's objectively going to be X this, X that. Like, that's a real shame. Speaking of genres, pitching, and video games in general, we have my final question of the day from the Josh Hutleys. Or the Josh Shutleys? It's rolled together, mate. You tell me what it is. Or the Joe Shutley. Let's just say Joe Shutley instead. Saying, hope you're well, legends. What would be your pitch for the best Christmas game?
Oh, God. Something that capitalises on the food side of it.
I thought you were going to go.
Well, I the thing is, as I've gotten older, I don't care as much about presents. Like, I just don't care as much about anything to do with the material side of it. It's not that they can't be massively rewarding. And I do love getting a new console at Christmas. That's a unique feeling.
Okay.
But I find that as I get older, the parts of Christmas that I love are the family, the friends, and the food. Combining any of those three things. And so I just love all the different Christmas menus that come on from different, like local places or chains or whatever. And I would do something that steers into that, and I would take, because I've been playing Arcade Paradise recently, which is a really cool game about managing a laundromat and turning it into an arcade and like doing the minutiae of looking after it. I would love some sort of Christmas themed restaurant game, I guess, where you're learning
that'd
different
be cool.
recipes, learning how to prepare different things with a nice, I'd make Christmas lo-fi music in the background or something.
Oh, so you wouldn't make it like Overcooked then, where you have the stress of trying to get this stuff together.
Like
you'd go for the super relaxing party vibes.
Yes, I would almost take the sandwich tech from Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, where you're sort of like stacking ingredients and then you spike it with one of those little picks to hold the sandwich together. You know, mix with lo-fi in the background, nice little bit of Christmas dishes and stuff, and you're just in a nice little cafe serving people. It's all warm and cozy with lights everywhere.
Okay,
I would take that.
I'll tell you what, mate, I'll buy that idea if only I can add in some slightly chaotic mini games to it. Just a little bit. So, for example, when the food is ready, you've got to slide it down the counter, you know, like in the classic Western films where you slide the beer along.
Or
so you've got to do like
Bishi
a pitching
special.
Thing where you just go like, slide it.
Like, I was going to say in Bishi Bashi Special when you have to throw the wife.
Oh, yeah, from the bridal
the
thing.
Of it, right? And launch it down the church.
Okay, that's good. I like your Christmas game there. Do you have a name for it?
Cozy Christmas.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to go completely the opposite. Mm-hmm. And I reckon that I'm going to come up with a first-person shooter.
Okay.
That is going to be called Naughty or Nice.
Very good.
It's going to be obviously Christmas based. You're going to be elves shooting it out in the Santa's workshop. Mm-hmm. And the guns and weapons that you get from it come from present boxes that are scattered around the map.
Okay.
And so the naughty or nice mechanic comes in. Okay, think about this, Jules. Where are we going with this? If you're in the top spot,
that's your morale,
or above 50% of the player base, and you're in the top bracket, uh-huh. you are on the nice scale, okay. and your guns are weaker. They get right, weaker okay. the higher up the chain you go. So the better you are at the game, the weaker your guns are, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're naughty at the bottom, your guns inversely do tons of damage, but it obviously skyrockets you up the leaderboard as a result because you'll be killing more stuff. Mm-hmm. So at the end, it's just a chaotic free-for-all with randomized weapons in all of the present boxes. You can't reload. You just got to grab a new present, open it up, and use whatever you got. Mm-hmm. That's my pitch. That's
but all,
my pitch.
All the naughty people, they're not in the spirit of Christmas. It's like you can dominate that leaderboard, but you're not really fulfilling the niceness. You're going to be giving presents.
That is true. Maybe the...
That's the real comment, though. Can you sacrifice video gamedom to top the leaderboard? I don't know.
Yeah, you got to end the game on that. Maybe it's got to be the inverse then. Maybe you're naughty if you're in the top bracket and then you're nice at the bottom because you're not killing stuff. There you go. If you flip it around, that game makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. As long as you're doing something that contributes to the vibe of Christmas.
And if you are in the top spot and you do not show any signs of leaving that top spot because you're that good... All the boxes will give you a single piece of coal, which will only do 1 point of damage against the person that you're throwing it against. There we go. That's my game.
I was thinking of like a first-person Christmas shooter where you were like firing baubles and different decoration and tinsel and stuff at like an army of Christmas trees. And you're sort of like, they have to be...
Decorating them.
They have to be decorated in different ways for you to finish them off. And it's like...
You can call
like
that deck the halls.
Yeah, I mean, that would work really well. And like maybe you're firing out like a constant stream of tinsel, and you've got to run around them to like.
Oh,
like
that's good. Oh, like the when you're the Skywalker with the snow speeder, you're tripping up the giant walkers. Thing.
Yeah, like a giant Christmas tree, and you've got to like bound them all in tinsel. Like, yeah, that would work.
So that is three Christmas games that we've given to you right there for free. So I'll tell you what, if you like any of these, Joe or Josh, let us know. And anyone else who's listening to this as well, if we've got any artists out there, draw us what you think the box art would be for those games, because I'd love to see them and send them over to us on the socials.
Yeah, I mean, I've got there's a really nice, we're not sponsored by Spotify, but a nice Spotify lo-fi Christmas playlist that I just keep putting on, maybe mainly because my brain is half dead, but it's nice. And so I think that kind of music in the background, if anyone would ever do that, like that feels like something that's a dead cert, like a lo-fi cafe game. That feels like something that could exist.
Perfect.
But yes, going to wrap this podcast because I sound horrible. But a massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions and talking points and everything else. Next week, do you want to do the spit thing again? We'll do Twitter and Instagram.
Do you know what, mate? I'm enjoying the fact that I get to ask you surprise questions as well, and I love to be able to help with this. So yes, let's keep this Instagram train rolling. So send your questions to me when I put out my, I guess they're called reels, aren't they? Sure. Stories on Instagram. Every Thursday it will be. I'll try and do it around midday to bring in some sort of normality to the time. Scott will do the same on Twitter, and we'll bounce back and forth between the two and make sure that we cover both bases.
Yes, we'll still find you guys. Like, you can just keep in touch with us. Like, obviously there's the standard Twitter thing we've done for over a year now, and then we'll add on the Instagram stuff. So whoever you find, whether it's me or Jules, we'll hoover up all the questions from there. For now though, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP.
But I have one more thing to say.
Yes.
And that is that if you, my friends, are looking for a nice little gift for yourself, your spouse, your significant other, or just a family member who you think has a terrible taste in cups, then go over to the What Culture Wrestling merchandise area for some reason and search for our UBP mugs, because you can support the channel. We don't get a cut of it, but you can support the channel. And you can also make sure that you drink out of Scott or I's faces. And that would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Please do this holiday season. For now, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.